Welcome back to Canucks Talk, Sportsnet 650. Jamie Dodd here, flying solo for today. Drantz has the day off. Load management, day-to-day, whatever you want to call it. We expect him back tomorrow. Randy Janda, color commentator for the Canucks here on Sportsnet 650, will join me in studio for the final hour of the show, but I got a solo segment here as well. Coming to you live from the Kintec studio, of course. 650, 650 is the Dunbar Lumber text line. The Bridge Street Dunbar Lumber in Ladner has moved to Progress Way in Tilbury's Industrial Park. More room, more product, more awesome. Details at DunbarLumber.com. Introducing Seeker, Canada's new free app for your ears. Dive into live radio, captivating podcasts, the latest news and sports updates all in one place. Whether you're rediscovering music, debating last night's game, or laughing along with your favorite DJs, Seeker has you covered. Plus, there are some of the best prizes in the country up for grabs. It's all here in one easy-to-use app. Download Seeker for free from the App Store or Google Play. Seeker, seek your sounds. Find the radio, podcasts, news, and sports that you love. All right, just before the break, I threw it out there. What are you most confident in? What are you most concerned about with the Canucks going into the regular season? And lots of good responses are coming in right now. Of course, get yours in, please. 650, 650 to the Dunbar Lumber text line. And one that I think is on a lot of people's list, and somebody texted it in even earlier in the show, what is the bigger question, PD's start or the goaltending? And I want to focus on that last one because a bunch of people have texted in concern about Thatcher Demko, concern about the goalies. And I'll start there. That's not on my list of things I'm most concerned about. Now, if we were going, you know, five deep or something like that, yeah, sure, of course, it ends up there. But if we're just talking about what are your biggest concerns, what do you think is most likely to upend this Canucks season? It's not goaltending for me. And I get it. Obviously, uncertainty around a player as good as Thatcher Demko, and of course, a player who has historically been as important to a team as Thatcher Demko has been, whenever you're dealing with that uncertainty, questions about the timeline, him having to adapt to an injury, different workload, different practice regimen, all of that. Yeah, okay, it's completely fair to have some questions, some concerns, some anxieties about that. I understand that. And I will say, if we're talking, okay, playoff time, yeah, they need Thatcher Demko ready. They need Thatcher Demko sharp. Again, to take that jump from good team to great team to Stanley Cup contender, they need Thatcher Demko to be very, very close to peak Thatcher Demko. But if we're just talking about the process of getting to that point, of getting to the playoffs, having finished, as I said in the first segment, in the top half of the conference, having put themselves in a position to have home ice in the first round of the playoffs, well, then Demko's situation doesn't concern me as much. Because I have a lot of confidence in the combination of Artur Shilovs, Kevin Lankinen, and I'll also put this, the team as a whole and the defensive structure of Rick Tocchet. Those things, right? The goalies, but also the team in front of them and the way they proved they were capable of playing. You add it all together, I have a lot of confidence in this team's ability to win regular season games without Thatcher Demko. I think there's still a lot of trauma is probably too strong a word, but bad memories for Canucks fans of the Bruce Boudreaux days where it really seemed like Thatcher Demko was going to have to make 10 five-alarm saves a game for the team to have a chance to win. This is not that version of the Canucks. They do not need all-star caliber goaltending, or at least they shouldn't need it. They didn't need it last year. All-star caliber goaltending night in, night out in order to accrue points, in order to not just stay in the playoff race, but stay in the race for second in their division, something like that. To be an elite Stanley Cup contender, sure, you want Thatcher Demko there. And again, as we start to project, you know, 6 months down the road, monitoring how he's doing, what his timeline ultimately is, how he looks when he gets back, how quickly his workload ramps up, how he manages it, those are all important questions. I don't want to write those off. I don't want to say there's zero reason for concern when it comes to Thatcher Demko. But again, I think they have the talent. I think they have the structure, to go back to a classic Canucks and Rick Tocchet buzzword. I think they have the structure in front of their crease to, one, survive his absence, however long it is, but also to handle some bumps in the road once he's back, right? Because it might, we shouldn't expect it to be elite Thatcher Demko necessarily as soon as he gets back. I don't think they need it to be right away, elite Thatcher Demko. I think, again, they have the ability to ease him back in, let him find his feet, let him play himself into form. So reasons for some concern, yes. I don't think it should be the thing anybody is most concerned about, though. I think the acquisition of Lankanen, the potential of Shelovs, the defensive structure, all of that should give you a lot of confidence that they're going to be able to navigate, at least for the regular season, the Thatcher Demko situation. 650, 650 is the Dunbar Lumber text line. One thing that people are texting in a lot here involves the blue line in some case, in some way, right? This one says the defensive foot speed is a concern for me. Need one more top four before the playoffs. Another one comes in from Whip, who says, I'm most concerned about the third pair defensive duo. I think we need to add another good right-handed shot, puck mover. He says he's comfortable with the goalies and the forward lines, though. This one, their defense and a lack of a top four clearly stops them from being a true contender. Another one, I'm feeling extremely confident in the PD bounce back, but worried about the second and third pairs on defense. So you're noticing a theme there. A lot of people texting in asked about their biggest concerns, not just about the blue line generally, but specifically about those bottom two pairs. And that's number one on my list as well. And I think it's interesting because if you were to analyze how much time we've spent on different subjects and different parts of the team in the couple of weeks that Drance and I have been back on the air, we have not spent very much time talking about the blue line. And I think there's some very fair reasons for that, right? One is there's not really any battles. Like, you'll look at the roster and you know, okay, those are their six best defensemen. Those are the six guys they've invested in. That, if healthy, is who's going to be playing against Calgary on Wednesday. And even beyond that, it's not as if it's like, well, who's going to start next to Quinn Hughes? Maybe that was kind of a little bit of a storyline in training camp, but we know now it's going to be Filip Hronek. And it's hard to come up with combinations that make much sense beyond what we've seen at practice this week, right? Hughes, Hronek, Susie Myers, Forbort, Desharnais. So in some ways, there's not a lot to talk about when it comes to the blue line. As we'll get into later in this segment, you can have a high degree of confidence in Quinn Hughes. A lot of these guys are known quantities, right? As much as they view Vincent Desharnais as a project, they think there's some more upside there. You kind of know what you're getting with a Susie Myers pairing. You kind of know what you're getting with a Hughes Hronek pairing. So there hasn't been a lot of room for debate, a lot of room for discussion, analysis over the Canucks blue line. But I do think it's very fair to be concerned again. And I would say specifically be concerned about the blue line beyond Quinn Hughes and Filip Hronek. That pair we should expect to be one of the best top pairs in the NHL again. We know what Quinn Hughes is capable of. He's the defending Norris Trophy winner. Filip Hronek was excellent for large stretches of last year as well. They had chemistry together. You shouldn't have any concerns about that top pair. Beyond that, well, then I think that's where the concerns start to creep in. And I want to be clear, it's not defensive for me. I mean, you just look at the size and the toughness, right? Susie, Myers, Forbort, Desharnais. I think the smallest one of those four is Derek Forbort, who's 6'4". Like, that is a massive, massive blue line that they've assembled beyond the top pair. So they're going to be able to do the job in zone. We know how the Tocchet and Foot system really prioritizes that size, that length, the ability to protect the middle of the ice. I think they're going to continue to be very good at that. My concern isn't, can they hold up in their own zone? It's, are they able to help the team generate more shots? That's been one of the big themes really since the playoffs last year, is can this team be dangerous enough offensively to really win when it counts? And yeah, a lot of that's going to fall on the forwards, of course, but this is a team game. I think to consistently generate shots at a high level, at a dangerous level, you can't just rely on the forwards. You need all five guys on the ice able to contribute at least in some way. And that's really where my concern for the second and third pairings on the blue line comes in. Can they move the puck well enough to allow this team, to allow the forwards to use their offensive skill and creativity consistently enough? And I mean, even think about the emphasis on rush offense, right? Well, yeah, you need your forwards to be creative. You need them to make the right plays, get to their landmarks, but you also need defensemen who can go back, retrieve the puck, make a breakout. Not that these guys are completely incapable of that, but it's a question of, can you do it at a high enough level? And I would even say one thing, for all we talk about the rush, the Canucks, I think, want to be more dangerous and more creative in zone, too, once they're already established in the offensive zone. And that's another place where having defensemen who can do something other than, you know, A, fling it on the net, or B, dump it down low for the forwards to go get on the puck below the goal line again, who can bring a little bit of creativity, well, that goes a long way to unlocking defenses, to putting pressure on the other team and allowing yourself to get those chances in zone. I don't know if I see enough of that with Susie Myers, Forbort, Desharnais. And I think, as much as they fit the mold defensively for Rick Tocchet, the challenge of making sure those two pairings can do enough offensively, can support the attack enough, to me, that's going to be the biggest challenge, the biggest coaching challenge for Rick Tocchet and his staff. And as some people are texting in, it might be the biggest challenge for the front office to have to go and address as well. Right? Is that if we got really ahead of ourselves, we flash forward to February, late February, early March, we're talking trade deadline needs for the Canucks. Number one on my list would be a puck moving defenseman who can play on that second pair, a legitimate top four second pairing puck moving defenseman that you feel good about, that can just stop the bleeding a little bit, or at least contribute offensively a little bit when Quinn Hughes and Filip Hronek are not on the ice. So like you, that's my biggest concern as well. Or like a lot of you, I should say, that's my biggest concern as well going into the season for the Vancouver Canucks. 650-650 is the Dunbar Lumber text line. You can text in. We're talking about your biggest concerns, but also don't accuse us of being negative. What are you most confident about? I will say, though, for as much as people accuse us being being negative, I threw both options out there, guys. I said you can text in what you're feeling good about or what you're most concerned about. A lot more people took the negative option. I'm just going to say that. So we got some confident ones that I'll get to, but Canucks fans have a type. Like, I guess that's what I'll say there. They think one way. But this one comes in from Table Saw James. I'm most confident about our first ever Norris Trophy winning defenseman. He also says, I'm most worried about one of the teams on the list of teams to have never won a cup winning one before the Canucks. I do enjoy that. That's an appropriately existential concern that you have about the Canucks, Table Saw James. But the point about Quinn Hughes is a really good one. And I'll get to what I'm most confident about in a second here. In retrospect, I probably should have said Quinn Hughes. It does almost feel like cheating. Like, if I was doing a show in Edmonton, and it's like, what are you most confident about? And people are like, Connor McDavid. It's like, yeah, well, I know, but I mean, what beyond that are you most confident about? But I don't think we should lose sight of what a gift it is, what an incredible luxury it is to have a player like Quinn Hughes on the Canucks. So I'm actually really glad that Table Saw James texted that in, because there's a tendency, once you get kind of used to the excellence of a star player, it's not necessarily front of mind, right? You tend to focus more on the things which are new this year, right? Like, oh, hey, they've brought in Jake DeBrusk. That's really exciting. But if we're just talking about who is going to influence the Canucks season the most, it's Quinn Hughes. And that's a very, very good thing for the Canucks, because he is amazing. Now, we can talk about the, you know, hey, what does the next step look like for Quinn Hughes, right? Can he challenge Cale Makar for best defenseman in the world? Can he win the Norris again? Can he push for 90 points or even 100 points as a defenseman? Is it possible he gets even better? I'm here for all those conversations, by the way, because I think it's foolish to put a limit on what Quinn Hughes is able to do. He is so elite and he has improved so relentlessly in his NHL career. But those are also kind of irrelevant just to the question of how will this season go? Because he doesn't need to do any of those things to be an incredible player, right? If he just stays the same, he's one of the best players in the league. And I think you should have a very, very high degree of confidence that Quinn Hughes is going to be one of the best players in the league, that he is going to dominate play, influence the game in a way that only a handful of other guys in the league can do. And the Canucks have that player. That's an incredible luxury. So good on Table Saw James for texting it in. Tyler in Langley says, I'm most confident in our coaching and leadership core. Puts our baseline as a playoff team. He says, I'm most worried about the Demko injury being a lingering concern. We are in over our heads without him. So I talked a little bit about how I don't agree that they're in over their heads without Demko, but again, I understand where the concern is coming from. That point about being most confident in the coaching and the leadership core is a really interesting one. And I think especially, not to take anything away from the players themselves, but I mean, we're just talking about, hey, Quinn Hughes, they have the reigning Norris Trophy winner. Well, they've got the reigning Jack Adams winner as well. And look, the Jack Adams, the history of Jack Adams winners is not as necessarily as illustrious as the history of Norris winners, right? There's some guys who have won, and then a couple years later, they've been hard pressed to get a job in the NHL. That's not Rick Tocchet. That was not a fluke goaltending-driven Jack Adams win. That was a this guy completely transformed this team type of win. And everything we've seen since Rick Tocchet was hired to take over the Canucks should give you a very high degree of confidence that he's going to bring a lot of value, that he is going to help this team win games. And I think the key thing is Rick Tocchet, he's so honest when he speaks to the media. And you see that honesty reflected in how he approaches things. When something isn't working out, he tries something new. He doesn't just keep banging his head against the wall. He is always looking for those options. And so to even tie it into the front office, right? I have concerns about how the blue line is going to hold up and move the puck beyond Hughes and Hronek. But I also have a lot of confidence that if that's not working come December, well, guess what? They're going to be looking for other options. They're not just going to throw their hands up and say, well, maybe we can make this work. They're going to proactively try to find solutions. And big picture, that is a really good thing. I think that's a smart shout out to be confident in. Right? The fact that they're not going to just sit on their hands if something is going wrong. They're going to look for ways to improve the team. Rick Tocchet is going to use all of the tools at his disposal to try to find solutions to the problems as well. Jim the Energy Guy says, I'm most confident about the Canucks' ability to have multiple forward lines rolling at once. Somebody else texts in, Mac and North Van. I'm confident in our depth up front, arguably the deepest in the league. Best third line, and Petey finally has a running mate. And this is something that other people have texted in about as well. And you know what? That's the number one thing I'm confident about as well. The depth up front, the depth of the forward group. You look at the bottom six, let's say, right? And I mean, even just look at like when they have 12 healthy forwards, you're going to have guys like Nils Höglander, Pugh Suter, Kiefer Sherwood, maybe Dan Heinen if he doesn't stick with Miller and Besser. Like those are going to be the guys in the mix for the fourth line when Dakota Joshua is back and Pugh Suter is healthy. Now, again, that's if healthy, right? And that's an important caveat, and you can't always count on being healthy all throughout the season. But you'd expect them to be healthy a little bit, right? If healthy, you're going to have some guys that you'd feel good about in your top six who end up playing on the fourth line. That's really, really impressive depth. The texter mentioned the third line. And as long as Connor Garland is there, and we can have the argument about do they have to find more minutes for him. But yeah, as long as Connor Garland is holding down that third line spot, they're going to have a chance to be really dangerous offensively with that line on the ice. That's really impressive depth. And then even you look beyond the top 12 guys who are going to figure in the NHL, you know, you got Nils Amon, Phil DiGiuseppe still in the organization. Those are both established NHL options who played a ton of games for you last year, who played in the playoffs for you, who have real defined skills that they bring to the table. Guys you can call up and plug right away on the penalty kill and not just cross your fingers and hope, but feel good that they're going to help you on the penalty kill. So that's 13-14. Ratu, he looks like a player. Baines played games for you last year, has taken a big step, obviously, in his skating, looks a lot better this year so far in preseason. You've got Lekker Mäki developing in Abbotsford. All of a sudden, you start going, you know, 15, 16 deep of names that, hey, if we had to play this guy, not only do you not feel nervous about it, right? Not only is it somebody that you don't have to protect and hide necessarily in the lineup, but a lot of these guys are bringing things you're actually pretty excited about. Like things you look at as, hey, that guy's got a skill set we can use to help us win games. Now, look, if you end up having to really deal with a rash of injuries and all of a sudden you've got three or four of those names in the lineup, that changes things, of course, but you can say that about any team. And yeah, there are questions about this team's forward group, right? We'll see. You know, can Danton Heinen stick as a first-line player? How does Daniel Sprong work? How does Jake DeBrusque work with Elias Pettersson? Do they need another impact guy at the top of the lineup? I think those are all very fair questions to ask. But if we're just talking about the depth and their ability to go into the system and still bring up guys who are no doubt about it, NHL players with real skills that can help this team win, that's going to be a big factor for this team. I don't think there's going to be a lot of, you know, empty calorie minutes at forward where it's guys who, as Drant says, are just getting cardio out there. That's not what they've built. They have built a very impressively deep forward group right now. Todd has bad takes, texts in. I am most confident in the fan base's fatalism. No matter how good it gets this season, it will end up bad. That's a good point. There will always be something to be fatalistic about. But you know what? I've been pleasantly surprised at some of the optimism. And I got to say, even the concerns that are coming in here, very reasonable for the most part. Not the sky is falling, doomer, end of the world stuff. Just very reasonable. Like, hey, are the second and third pair going to be able to move the puck? That's fine. That's not fatalistic. That's just smart. That's just reasonable. John in the fort texts in, I'm most worried about being able to stay as healthy overall as we did last year. If you look at our top 5 to 6 contributors last year, they were all at 80 plus games played. That feels more like an anomaly than something we can expect to be repeated. That's a good shout by John in the fort. They were exceptionally healthy last year. Now, obviously, that's already falling off a little bit with the concerns over Thatcher Demko, Dakota Joshua. But what John is referencing, right? You look at Besser, Hughes, Miller, Pettersson, Hronek. Incredible run of health last year. You can't count on that same run. I think, again, though, the big question for me is, okay, if you lose, let's say you lose Brock Besser for 20 games in the middle of the season. Let's say you lose JT Miller for 15 games in the middle of the season, right? Again, I don't think the bottom's going to fall out. I think they have enough talent around those star players now that obviously you're going to notice a drop-off, but I don't think it should sink them in terms of fighting for that good playoff positioning, in terms of fighting for hosting a first-round playoff series. So again, much like Thatcher Demko, I think the question for me is, can you be healthy and good to go, or as healthy as anyone is, by the time the playoffs roll around? Barring truly catastrophic injuries, which happens, we've all seen it before. We know how it can derail a really good team season. So knock on wood, hope it doesn't happen. But barring truly catastrophic injuries, injuries can be an issue. But I don't know that they're going to be enough to completely change how we look at this team and completely knock them out of the, you know, upper half of the Western Conference discussion. But yeah, injuries and how healthy they were last year. Definitely a good shout out from John in the fort. 650 is the Dunbar Lumber text line. Lots of good thoughts coming in here. I haven't had a chance to read nearly, you know, maybe like a tenth of them. Lots of thoughts coming in about what you are most confident about, what you're most concerned about for the Canucks in this upcoming season as well. So keep those coming in. 650 to the Dunbar Lumber text line. Randeep Jandal, run it past him. What's he confident about? What's he concerned about? Of course, he is the color commentator here for Canucks games on Sportsnet 650, and he joins me in studio for the final hour of the show next here on Canucks Talk, Sportsnet 650. Welcome back to Canucks Talk, Sportsnet 650. Jamie Dodd here. Canucks Talk, of course, brought to you by Avenue Machinery and Douglas Lake Equipment. Let Kubota do your heavy lifting. Visit them online at dleamc.com. We are coming to you live from the Kintec studio. Kintec, Canada's favorite orthotics provider, powered by thousands of five-star Google reviews. Sore feet? What are you waiting for? 650. 650 is the Dunbar Lumber text line. Drance is day-to-day, so we're going next man up here, and that is color commentator for Sportsnet 650 for Canucks games, and also, of course, part of Hockey Night in Canada, Punjabi, Randeep Janda. What's going on, man?
I'm happy to be called up to the, I never did, I guess.
I wouldn't call it really the big team.
I was
more like It's more like if Abbotsford needed an extra player and the Canucks sent somebody down.
Come on now. Come on. Canucks talk. You got the branding. I was going to say, the reason I delayed was because it was not because I was searching for words. It was because
how do I make this polite?
I've done the 1 p.m. slot before.
Yes.
It was the noon hour slot.
That's true.
The noon hour slot is kind of new, but I'm outside the noon zone.
Yeah, we were like,
it's good to be back.
He's not comfortable with the noon hour. Let's put him in a position to succeed at 1 o'clock.
I wake up at 12:30. Noon hour just doesn't work.
Well, you look great for having woken up half an hour ago.
No, I was on the morning show this morning.
Three Putt Chan says, just like Randeep coming in for Drancer, I'm happy with the depth the Canucks have.
There you go.
There you go. That's what it's all about.
Wait, hold on one second. I was told in my Twitter notifications that we'd be talking Arsenal Champions League this hour.
Well, see, funny, because I was trying to decide, do I want to be polite and nice and show gratitude for you helping me out here and ask you about the Yankees, or do I want to be rude and ask you about the Dolphins?
Oh.
Always rude.
Hey, Jamie, you know me well. One of my sayings is, slander is a part of sports
talk. That's
so
true.
I would appreciate if you led with the negative.
So who are the Dolphins starting at quarterback?
Might be me next week based on this. They got an extra. I also saw a tweet as I was coming in here.
Can you throw a screen pass to Tyreek Hill that doesn't go backwards and result in a fumble?
Brutal, brutal. I gave up on watching that. I was supposed to go after Canucks training camp to Seattle to watch the Dolphins play. I was committed. Tua got hurt, and I was like, yeah, no. Skylar Thompson, seen that happen before. I'm not paying my own money to go watch that.
Do not need to be involved in that. I mean, I will say one thing that Yankees fans and the rest of Major League Baseball fans can unite in is joy. Houston Astros out.
Yes.
Not going to the ALCS for the first time in a long time. So.
I love that because they're the most hated franchise or one of the most hated. But you might actually find this thing interesting. I voiceovered for the Diljit Dosanjh show in Toronto, who's one of the biggest South Asian artists, if not the biggest out of India, for the show in Toronto. So just voiceover work in Punjabi for the show at Rogers Centre. And you know what they sent me? They sent me a City Connect Blue Jays jersey with my name on the back. So Yankees fan over here has a Blue Jays jersey with my name on the back.
Were those like the black ones?
Yes.
Yeah. I mean, I feel like they probably had trouble selling those. They were not the prettiest jerseys I've ever seen.
I am honored to have it, even though I don't support the team.
That's fantastic. Cool, you're an honorary Blue Jays fan.
If you see anything on eBay, you'll know where it
came from. Everyone who works for Rogers is an honorary Blue Jays fan.
True.
Basically, we own the team. All right, what are you going to do? Okay, so I was just talking in the previous segment, and I threw it out to fans, got tons of really good responses, right? I mean, we don't know exactly what the team is going to look like, but we got a very good idea, barring a couple of spots towards the bottom of the roster here. So I threw it out. What are you feeling most confident about the Canucks going into the regular season? What are your biggest concerns for the Canucks going into the regular season? I'll give you mine here. So my biggest concern was the ability to move the puck from the blue line beyond Hughes and Hronek. So the pairings of Susie Myers and Forbort Desharnais, is there enough offensive ability? Is there enough ability to start these breakouts and generate that rush offense consistently that Rick Tocchet wants the team to do? That was my biggest concern. The thing I'm most confident in, and I said, you know, somebody texted in Quinn Hughes. I was like, yeah, that should have been the answer. He's awesome. That should have been the answer. But what I said was forward depth. I think this is the deepest forward group we've seen in a long, long time. And you look at it, like Nils Höglander, when they're healthy, could be on the fourth line, right? He's obviously overqualified for that. So that was mine. Concern, puck moving in the bottom two pairs, confidence, forward depth. Am I on the mark here?
Yeah, so winger depth, I agree 100%, because there used to be years where we'd be, you know, kind of talking about the names of who could jump up into the first line. Höglander was a part of that conversation. Going back, you know, a different regime. Jake Virtanen was a part of that conversation. There are so many names. Brendan Leipzig. Like, go through that list.
Yeah.
It was pretty dire when you'd say, okay, who's your second option, your third option? Now, to your point, you've got Connor Garland playing on a third line, and he could jump up into the top six easily, and some would argue he probably should. Dakota Joshua, when he's back, is a player that can easily play in the top six, especially if you're looking for that unicorn type of F1 dominant player that can just disrupt. And we haven't even got to Höglander. We haven't got to Kiefer Sherwood, who might have that upward mobility as well. DeBrusk on the higher end, Danton Heinen might be able to be on that elevator going up and down the lineup as well. So I agree with you there, but I think, and I want to bring this up because I think there's been some real doubt in this market over the last year. The biggest reason to be confident is your star power.
Yeah.
And JT Miller, Quinn Hughes, We saw that last year, but also Elias Pettersson, right? Mm-hmm. And that's why the reason I bring this up is there are teams across the league, teams that are playoff teams, the New York Islanders for once, that are trying to find, all right, who's the star and who's the B-level talent?
Mm-hmm.
Vancouver's got three A-level players on their roster, fourth when Thatcher Demko is healthy. That's why you should be confident. You've got difference makers in Quinn Hughes, Norris Trophy winner, JT Miller, probably, guys, the most respected player on the way he plays in the NHL. High-end skill, but in your face. Like, mm-hmm. you talk to players that are in the league, they say, that's a damn good player. That's a guy that you don't like to line up against. And you heard it from DeHarnay at the Jake Milford Classic when he said it in different words. Like, you don't like playing this against this guy. And Elias Pettersson, on his day, is an elite-level player. So, yep. And I know there's a lot of doubts, but remember the beginning of the year last year, this guy was untouchable. He was you know, everything.
He was dominant.
And that is closer to the Elias Pettersson than we know. And I think he's capable of playing like that. Maybe not to that level, but he's a high-end player. So the biggest reason you have to be confident is you've got four elite-level players on your roster, and those are the guys that win games in the playoffs and championships.
I think it's a really good point, right? Just that star level talent that they have. And of course, that was the case. You go back a few years, right? And it didn't pan out. But when you combine that star level talent with now the coaching, the infrastructure around them, and the depth, that's the separating factor for the Canucks between, you know, you look at even in their division, right? Like the Kraken. Okay, they've got some nice players, but do they have anyone who you look at as truly a top of the lineup, bona fide, you know, first line player or top pairing type of guy? Not necessarily, right? Even the LA Kings, and with Drew Doughty injured, again, they've got some really good players, but that truly elite talent is kind of the separating factor for the Canucks. And to me, it's why I think, you know, as I said earlier in the show, finishing in the top two in their division, top half of the conference, hosting a playoff series, like that should be a kind of reasonable expectation. When you have that type of talent at the top of your roster, those should be where your sights are set at the beginning of the season. The Pettersson one is so interesting, right? And I'm a little surprised actually more people didn't text in about Pettersson when I threw it out there, what they're most concerned about. But one just came in here. My biggest concern is Petey. He is not what he was. So I have a very high degree of confidence in Elias Pettersson bouncing back and looking more like the dominant version we saw in the first half of last year as opposed to after the All-Star break and into the playoffs. I just think you look at the entirety of his career, he has been that player so often, there's every reason to think he will be again. But I'll also admit that if we're 15 games into the season and we haven't seen that, well then, okay, then it is really cause for concern at that point. And I guess it's a tricky one to place because as much as I'm confident he will be elite, I also recognize that the downfall, like the downside, if he isn't elite, is huge for this team. Like they need him to be elite to be a true Stanley Cup contender.
Yeah, you need a 1-2 punch at the high end down the middle to be a true contender in the NHL. That goes back a decade, and that is true to this day. JT Miller has shown that he can be that. And the large sample size shows us, mm-hmm. Elias Pettersson has shown that as he's grown as an NHL player. Now, your point about last year and the texture's point about last year, absolutely. The second half of last year was a problem. The playoffs were a problem. But we also have some understanding that health was related to that. Now, when Elias Pettersson is moving his feet and he's not reaching as much, where there's a lot of reach in his games when he's struggling, right? He's not moving his feet, so he's kind of lunging forward.
Yep.
That's when he struggles. When he's ahead of it, when he's skating, when he's got people and defensemen on their heels, that's when you see the best of Elias Pettersson. So, yes, it is a massive conversation for this team. If Elias Pettersson comes out like he did last year, guess what? Nobody's going to be saying anything.
No.
And I think there's also an understanding from a player's perspective, this is a marathon. It matters what you do in October and November and December and January. No doubt it does. But if you burn out before then, you're really needed as a star in March, April, May. That's when you're really needed. So how do you balance that a little bit? You're still given 110, but this is a grind. I remember Travis Green once saying, you know, November and December, like that's when the grind starts.
Mm.
How do you make sure you're ready for the marathon? And a part of that is mentality. And the other aspect is physically being fit enough. Right. So I think last year was a learning process for a lot of players, including Elias Pettersson. But the larger sample size shows us this guy, he is one of the elite players in the NHL when he's going. Now he's got to level up.
Yeah. And that really, that point about it's a marathon, not a sprint, right? And being ready for the playoffs. That was really one of the themes that the team, both the players and the coaching staff and management, talked about after they were eliminated by the Oilers, right? You heard that emphasis on preparing yourself to be ready to play your best hockey, even though you're going to be banged up, even though it's been at the end of a long season, but preparing yourself to be at your best in April and May. And I think that's an interesting way to view this entire Canucks season, right? Is, okay, look, you still want to go out and have a really strong regular season and meet that standard that you set last year, if not in terms of points, at least in terms of performance and effort and all that. But, you know, if Miller doesn't score 100 points again, but he's in great condition to go into the playoffs and be a beast, and, you know, same with Quinn Hughes, same with Elias Pettersson, like, you want to see them hit those tier, those benchmarks of production, but more than anything, they need to be good going into the playoffs, right? And that's the whole team. It's like, okay, yeah, go have a good regular season. That's also not what we're judging you on anymore, though. We're judging you on what you do once you get to the playoffs.
Last year was about setting the culture, and Rick Tocchet had a major role in that, going back even beyond that. Mm-hmm. But they were setting that. Hey, these are the work habits. These are the levels you have to hit. This is the expectation. The way I look at this year is, all right, it's going to be a lot more internal for the players to say the leaders are going to be resetting that culture. You've done it before. You know, we talked about hashtag the start last year.
Yep.
I remember being on the show with you and we were talking about the beginning, the first 15 games. If this happens, what's going to be the reaction? I think the Canucks showed last year that, hey, it's possible to have a good start in this market. It doesn't always have to be a terrible start. It doesn't have to be a mediocre start. But even in season, the fact that they're able to check themselves when they lost a couple of games, reset, boom, you're ready to go. Resetting within games. That was growth from this team. Now, the next chapter of that is, it's a part of like who you are, who your identity is. And I think that's where JT Miller has that, Quinn Hughes has that. I think Elias Pettersson has that too, but you need that to be reset by your stars, and everybody else buys into that. So this is really where the challenge is going to be for some of these leaders of, all right, you've done it before. You've proven to yourself that good things can happen in this market. Good things can happen to this team.
We're not cursed.
Yeah, no. And listen, the sky is falling aspect of this market, we've lived it.
Yes.
Right? Me and you are both from this region. All of our, you know, a lot of our listeners may have go back to being young kids growing up and, you know, having their uncle curse at the television as in 94 or the late 90s, the early 2000s, whatever. There's been some good moments too.
Mm-hmm.
But for the players in that room going through what they went through, COVID and all of that, it's like, all right, there's some good here.
Yeah.
And how do you build on that? Like, you want to make sure that you come back strong this year, and a lot of that's internal. Rick Tocchet is going to be pulling the strings. He's the coach, but I think the leaders this year are going to show, all right, now it's a part of who we are and who our identity is.
I think depth, too, the other thing it does, right, in terms of helping the team be ready for the playoffs, is maybe reduces the load a little bit on the star players, right? Again, they're always going to be the key guys pulling the rope and, as you said, setting that culture. But if you do have a little bit more depth farther down the lineup, maybe just helps a little bit, not piling up those minutes for guys like Miller and Pettersson and keeping them a little bit fresher for the postseason. Okay, so you're most confident in star talent. I agree with that. I think that's a good one. Flip it around. Biggest concern for the Canucks coming into the season?
I think for a lot of folks, I'm gonna pick two. One will be the biggest question, and one will be the biggest concern. The biggest concern, I have to agree with you, is that third pair specifically.
Okay.
I think Forbert and Desharnais, as of right now, Forbert's not going to change who he is.
No.
He's a physical defenseman. He's primarily going to be used on the PK. He's a guy that, in a way, is there to replace an Ian Cole. Most notably on the PK. Does he have the puck skills of an Ian Cole?
Yeah, that's the thing. Like, Ian Cole was a sneaky good puck mover.
He was.
He wasn't a liability back
there.
And he
could see the game really well, as we noticed in our post-game interviews with him. A very, very smart player and can communicate well. And within that room, a big leader as well. Rick Tocchet mentioned that numerous times. I think Forward's going to bring elements of that. Now, with Desharnais, can he be more skilled on the puck? Can he be more comfortable? Maybe skilled is the wrong word. Because in Edmonton, those puck skills, that was a challenge, moving the puck cleanly out of his own zone. That was, at times, a challenge. So, for that third pair, do we see growth in him working with Sergei Gonchar? And, you know, last practice I was at, not yesterday, but the day before, after practice, a lot of one-on-one time with Sergei Gonchar. So, you're not only banking on this player to become better, but you're also banking on your coaching staff. So, the biggest, I think, concern for me is, if that's a pairing that is, that's the way you're going with it. It's Hughes, Roenick, Susie Myers, who played well in the second half of last year, and their shutdown pair in the playoffs. If that's your third pair, are you able to cleanly move the puck out of your own zone with those two guys?
And Mike, the urologist from Brockville, texts in, how much do you think Tocchet can coach up that third pair the way he did with Juulsen? That's referencing what you're talking about. But like, even the Noah Juulsen thing kind of shows the limitations of coaching up, right? Because it got to the playoffs, and you know, when Noah Juulsen had to come in, you saw the drop-off, right? And I think you saw some of the limitations in going to a guy like Noah Juulsen. Now, they have higher aspirations for Desharnais than they do for Juulsen, and I don't want to bet against this coaching staff, right? Because they've got a lot of successes under their belts, but it's a big ask to go from, as you said, a guy who struggled to move the puck in Edmonton to somebody who you feel really good about playing in that role. Developing that in season is a big ask. Not to say that it's impossible, but I still do wonder if this, if we're not talking, you know, just like they made the Nikita Zadorov trade, what was that, November, December,
yeah,
right? If we're talking about, okay, then they went out and got another big physical guy, if they go out and do that, but for a puck mover on the third pair at some point, even ahead of the deadline, right? Like, I think they're going to give it a chance, you know, maybe 25 games, something like that, to see, can it work like this? But if it's a consistent issue, and if it's preventing them from being consistently dangerous on the rush, I think they're going to pivot at some point before the deadline even to try to address that.
Well, it's about moving the puck up the ice, right? If you want to play faster, and I can see that happening on the other two pairs where you've got Quinn Hughes, Hronik, no worries there. You've got Soucy and Myers. And remember, Carson Soucy's able to move the puck out, yep, of his own zone. I think he's quite underrated in that regard.
And I think that's Carson Soucy might be one of the players I'm most interested to watch this, yep, season, right? Because he's in and out of the lineup last year. But I know it's preseason, but that game they played on Abbotsford, like, you could tell he really stepped up and was like, I'm going to do some stuff with the puck. And he has that ability, as you said. I still don't know if I love it as the number three defenseman on a Stanley Cup contending team. Like, number four, all right. Sure. Number three, I don't know. But I do think there's a little bit more for him to give offensively, certainly, right? Like, he scored 10 goals
for
multiple,
sure,
times in the past.
With Soucy and then with Myers, we know he can move the puck, right? But to your point about Soucy, I wonder if there's an element of Filip Hronek that would also channel that same energy to say, hey, I'm needed to do this now. Mm. There's another layer to my game. And this is the conundrum, right? And I remember at the end of last season when Patrick Alvin talked about Filip Hronek's role on the team, and he said, yeah, we want to see maybe on a different pair or lead, drive his own pair. He was asked about that, and I tweeted something out about it, and people were like, are you nuts? Why would you move him off the Hughes pairing? But this is the reason.
And then Quinn Hughes said that.
Exactly. He might have been in my mentions too. I don't know. But there is a thought of, can you get this player to hit another level and take a little bit more responsibility?
Mm-hmm.
It's like doing a radio show, right? In our business, the person that talks generally the most is called the A chair.
Yeah.
When I'm the B chair, which I often am, I can kind of sit back.
It's great.
Do my own thing. Pull a Filip Hronek, chill out. While Quinn Hughes is doing all the work over here.
It's amazing. Sometimes I get to be the B chair when I host the morning show with Halford. I'm like, this is amazing. I'm just chilling.
I made a career out of it working with Dan Riccio. What are you talking about? Got my 8.25 and I was happy. But yeah, not quite. But with that though, do you see a little bit more from a player when they're away from that asset? And you know, which is a Quinn Hughes. So I don't think it's a smart move to move away from that pair, but at some point, do you do a little bit more experimentation?
The only reason I don't want to move away from it, and I get it, right? Like, hey, they were one of the best in the league last year, you know, and when Quinn Hughes, the captain, is out there publicly being like, keep us together, that holds a ton of weight, obviously. Of course it does. I would be open to splitting them up if I thought there was another viable option to pair with Quinn Hughes. Like, Soucy Hronik as the second pair, that's very interesting to me. But then you're either moving Tyler Myers up,
or
Desharnais. Yeah. And neither, like, I don't feel great about either of those options. That's the stumbling block for me about splitting them up.
So the Desharnais one, though, because we've talked about the challenges handling the puck or moving the puck out of the zone that he had in Edmonton. The strength of his game, though, is in zone defending.
Mm-hmm.
He is strong. He is engaged in battles. And is he going to take penalties? I'm telling you right now, Canucks Nation, yes, he will. He's a guy that maybe he crosses the line a little bit. He's very physical. He's engaged in every scrum, not unlike Nikita Zadorov in that regard. But the penalty kill, the long stick, the ability to disrupt at the blue line, like, there's some good defensive skills there too. It's just you have to watch out for the mobility and the puck skills. Now, if you're able to get him in line with the way you want to play, I could see him playing with Quinn Hughes occasionally.
Yeah, that's the. I wonder if it would almost have to be a by committee type of thing, right? So Hronik's still getting some shifts with Hughes, but then he moves down and plays with Soucy a little bit because, look, we've seen, we all know the list of less skilled defensemen that Quinn Hughes has played next to and thrived next to, right? You go down Luke Shen and Noah Juleson, et cetera, et cetera. But I don't know if you want to force that on him, right? Like, I think we've also seen how having a skilled partner can help elevate Quinn Hughes's game, right? Like, yeah, obviously he elevated Hronik, but I think Hronik did his part and helped elevate Quinn Hughes in his Norris season last year, right? So I don't know if you want to take that completely off the table. Like, yes, of course, he can be good playing next to Vincent Desharnais. It's Quinn Hughes. He can be good playing next to anyone. But are you taking some upside from his game off the table? Now, look, hey, maybe it balances out because you get Hronik and Soucy together. I just, man, if they had another, like, even, you know, 4-5 type of guy instead of a clear bottom pairing guy to pair with Quinn Hughes, it would be different, I think.
Yeah, I agree with that. I think in the short term, whether it's Hughes, Hronik, or even if you separate that pairing, that's a short-term solution. There does seem to be another player that's needed there long-term. Yep. The biggest question I have, though.
Okay.
Rather than concern, is the power play.
All right, interesting.
The power play, and not because will it be an 18.8% power play like it was at the second half of the season. More of how good will this be? Because if you're a top 10 power play, say you're around 9 or 10, yeah, you'd expect that from this level of player. Look at that power play one. They're supposed to be good.
Yeah.
But if they can crack the top 5, you're probably getting a few more points on the board. If you're a top 3, which... we know Edmonton's going to be up there. We know Tampa Bay's usually up in that spot as well. I would not sleep on Nashville either because now they have a few more weapons to deal with. But if you're in that range and if you can really make this a fluid power play, one that is road hockey style that Rick Tocchet calls it, and your ability to attack and attack multiple pressure points rather than telegraphing it to one way, if you're able to hit that, Jamie, that's giving you a number of extra points all of a sudden. You're probably picking up some wins there as a result of that. So the biggest question for me is, how good is that power play going
to
be?
I was talking just briefly about the power play earlier in the show, and it's fascinating to me because you look at last season and how it went for the Canucks, and Rick Tocchet, almost everything he preached and wanted to do with the team worked, right? The defensive structure, the effort, the details, the practice habits, leadership, all of it. The only thing that didn't really work was the power play. Right? You did not see the type of transformation that he wanted to from the power play. So I'm very curious, and I think your way of phrasing it as a question is interesting. I'm very curious to see now with, okay, training camp number 2, talking about this power play and a full season trying to implement it under their belts, do those 4 guys and Jake DeBrusk, who's coming in new to the situation, have more success playing that road style hockey, right? And being more dynamic, more fluid. And again, it's not just like a, you know, casual, oh, that'll be interesting to see. But as you said, elite Stanley Cup contending teams, you know, they have multiple things that they do well. And I think you can look at the Canucks and say they're going to have good forward depth. They're going to be a really stout defensive team, but you need another edge. I think the power play is their best chance to have that other thing that's like top 5 in the league, right? And if you can be, that could be the difference between being a pretty good team and being a Stanley Cup contender for them.
Yeah, and remember, this is a team that scored the most out of any team against the Edmonton Oilers in the playoffs on the power play.
Mm-hmm.
Like, as much as we were saying, what's wrong with this power play, they score a couple more power play goals, they might win that series. Like, it was you know, very fine margin, so the weapons are there. And now with DeBrusk having a left-handed shot, a quality shot in that bumper spot, and we haven't seen it work yet. We haven't seen the entire power play on the ice against competition yet. But in theory, if you can give JT Miller another option in the middle of the ice there where you know Brock Besser is going to be down low, you know you've got the cross-ice feed with Elias Pettersson, and if Quinn Hughes has been doing the work, like he said, he's targeting 20 goals this season.
Let's go.
You've got multiple threats, but that decision-making and the ability to pull the trigger has to be a lot quicker than it was last
year. I want to see... and this is something I've thought for years now, but I want to see Elias Pettersson more involved consistently on the power play, not just as a decoy or as a one-timer threat. Get the puck on his stick. And this falls on him, too. I'm not saying, oh, bail out PD by giving him more touches, right? He's got to be more assertive, more willing to move, quicker making plays when he does get the puck. But like, he's such a smart player and such a good playmaker, and he doesn't touch the puck a lot on a power play. Like, get him more involved, I think, would go a long way.
And touching the puck doesn't necessarily mean having the puck on your stick. I want him to attack the blue paint.
Yep.
Going down that right-hand side where you're driving, and if there's a play that JT's making or Brock Besser, similar to Kiefer Sherwood to Arshdeep Bance in that preseason game, is that a play that we see a little bit more this season from Elias Pettersson? Because we know he's got that shot, but you know who else knows he has that shot?
Everyone else.
The entire NHL.
Yeah. All right. Preseason coverage here on Sportsnet 650 is brought to you by Tiletown, as BC's favorite hockey team kicks off a new season. Receive 20% off any regular priced in-stock tile. Visit mytiletown.ca for details. Introducing Seeker, Canada's new free app for your ears. Dive into live radio, captivating podcasts, the latest news and sports updates all in one place. Whether you're rediscovering music, debating last night's game, or laughing along with your favorite DJ, Seeker has you covered. Plus, there are some of the best prizes in the country up for grabs. It's all here in one easy-to-use app. Download Seeker for free from the App Store or Google Play. Seeker, seek your sounds. Find the radio, podcast, news, and sports you love. Final segment of Canucks Talk coming up next. Randeep Janda sitting in for Drancer today. We'll look ahead to the final preseason contest for the Canucks tomorrow night against the Oilers at Rogers Arena. We'll continue to take your texts as well. It is Canucks Talk on Sportsnet 650. Welcome back to Canucks Talk, Sportsnet 650. Jamie Dodd here with Randeep Janda, filling in for this hour for Thomas Drance, who should be back on the show tomorrow. We are live from the Kintec studio. 650. 650 is the Dunbar Lumber text line. The Bridge Street Dunbar Lumber in Ladner has moved to Progress Way in Tilbury's Industrial Park. More room, more product, more awesome details at DunbarLumber.com.
That was a rights free beat.
Yes.
It was like a Black Star back in the day. That was most definitely like so Paulie stuff, man.
I think that's an interesting one. I think that's the one, if I recall correctly, Drance and I got an argument about, because he said it sounded like a beat from Illmatic, and I disagreed.
No, it's not grimy enough.
That's exactly what
it's
I
not
said.
Grimy enough.
That's exactly what I said. And he was like, well, no, go back and listen to it. You forget. Like, there's some, and it's like, he has a bit of a point where there's a couple songs where it's not that grimy, but all of the songs are like melancholy, at least. There's like a minor key feel to it.
Yes.
I like the Black Star comparison. That's interesting.
I think Black Star is the one, because there's a little positivity.
Yes,
coming out.
Exactly.
Illmatic, which is one of my favorite albums.
I agree.
We have very similar musical tastes.
Well, at least in hip hop. I don't know. Yeah. I don't know if you're rocking as much Bruce Springsteen as I am.
And I was gonna say, I don't know if you're rocking as much God Nozzle and Bill Keith Assange.
No, but there is some overlap in the Venn diagram. You're right.
Some overlap. But you're right. Illmatic is a dark album,
yes,
for the most part.
Yeah. So I agree with you. Not gritty enough for Illmatic. All right, I'm glad I got you to weigh in on that long running Canucks talk debate here. Okay, so Canucks finally playing their final preseason game tomorrow night at Rogers Arena. Of course, day off for the team today. So we've seen them practice twice this week, you know, make a couple of tweaks from day to day, but we've also seen a lot of it stay the same. And now we're expecting that, you know, quote unquote, as we all call it, dress rehearsal affair at Rogers Arena tomorrow. What are you kind of watching for? What are you paying attention to and hoping to see from the Canucks in this one tomorrow against the Oilers?
Yeah, well, last segment we talked about the power play. Considering we haven't seen very much of power play one,
I think that's a huge one. Right? Just get some reps out there.
Get some reps in, and how does it look different, right? JT Miller was asked a couple of days of, you haven't had the ice time, but what have you been able to do? A lot of video work, so let's see what that looks like. So first bullet, and if you missed it, go back on the podcast. We talked about it in the last segment in a little bit more in depth. But beyond that, I want to see those battles as well. If Pugh Suter's not playing, we know he's day-to-day at this point. All right, Atu Ratu, if you got that opportunity to play on the lines with Nils Höglander and Connor Garland, you've done well thus far. But now I expect to see an Edmonton team that is pretty close to opening day roster. How do you do?
That's interesting, too. I am curious about what kind of roster we'll see from Edmonton, because, of course, you know, it's, I believe it's their final preseason game as well. But we also know the dynamic when it's a road game. Do you dress your best guys? I think they dressed their best guys against Seattle last night. I do wonder, though, if ultimately we see a pretty good lineup because it's their final one as well. And that sets up for a really interesting test for the Canucks, right?
Two things for Edmonton, though. One, it's the dress rehearsal. And I think a lot of teams take that final game as, all right, let's refine what we're working on. The second thing is, remember, this team was trash at the beginning of last year.
That's a good point.
They don't want that again. I think hitting the ground running for this Oilers team and understanding the difference in making the playoffs and home ice and all of that, that was decided for them in a lot of ways at the beginning of last year.
Mm-hmm.
So the mentality has to be different. So that's why I expect to see a team that is probably, like I said, more opening day roster, where they're trying to say, all right, this is where we're going to figure out some of these, you know, iron out the details and the wrinkles. So with that, with Aturatu, you got a taste of, you know, Connor McDavid and Leon Draisaitl's game last time around, but now you're going to have a little bit more depth throughout that lineup. You're going to have probably a little bit more physicality in this lineup, because if you do have some of their veteran defensemen playing in this game, remember, Darnell Nurse wasn't playing in that one, other players, and the intensity goes up a little bit more. So if that is still a conversation of when this team is going to make those decisions, if it comes down to Aturatu, Nils Åman, Ersti Benz, all right, how are you going to separate yourself?
Yeah. It's funny because obviously the coaching staff wants to see them put, you know, a final case on tape and the preseason on a high note, all of those things. The players are still gunning for those spots. I'm also just curious about how much it's actually going to come down to hockey stuff and how much it's going to come down to waivers and salary cap and all of those things, right? So I am very curious to see how Aturatu performs, Baines, Åman, obviously. But I also don't know if it's going to make a difference, right? Like, it's going to be really, really difficult for them, I think, to significantly move the needle. The one exception to that for me might be the fact if Ratu gets to skate with Nils Höglander and Connor Garland, right? Because then all of a sudden it's not just, you know, are you squeaking onto the team as a fourth liner and you're going to play 8 minutes a night? That's an important spot, right? And you even think about how that line's going to be deployed. You've got Connor Garland, who can do a lot of the heavy lifting in terms of driving play offensively. That line is probably not going to be matched up against the other team's top lines, right? You're going to look for those softer offensive opportunities. And I think if Tocchet and the coaching staff see Ratu as a guy who has enough upside to kind of ride shotgun with those players, bring a little bit of size and a little bit of physicality, but really contribute to a scoring third line, like, that's not something that Nils Åman has in his game, right? And that could be the one area where, and obviously Ersti Bane's not a center, right? So if he has, if it's that offensive upside coupled with the faceoff winning and all of that, and they think, you know what, this trio's been really good together and we want to keep them together, that might be the one spot I can see where Ratu could really kick down the door and find a way to beat out Baines and Åman to make the team.
Yeah, that's a great point, but also looking at the matchups, if it plays out this way, if Edmonton travels, McDavid and Draisaitl, which for the final preseason game you kind of expect, but we'll see. If Aturatu is playing in a matchup role against an Adam Henrik, stylistically, veteran player versus young player, this is going to be a good education for him and also a measuring stick.
It's a good test, though, to see, like, okay, can we put you in that third line role and you go against the Adam Henriks of the world and hold your own at least?
Exactly. And it is a soft matchup if you take advantage of it.
Yes.
As we saw in the playoffs last year, we were saying, hey, Tommy Novak versus Elias Pettersson, that's a soft matchup. Or, go through the list of Colton Sissons.
Mm-hmm.
Was that a matchup, soft matchup? Not
Ryan McLeod, right? Or whoever.
It didn't happen. So with this way, you know, I'm sure if Edmonton does travel Henrik or a third line that has a veteran center on it, they're probably looking at Ratu the same way. And okay, this is a soft matchup, right? It depends on which side of the coin you're on. But I think at the very least, whoever that center is, whether it's, you know, Henrik or Ryan, or doesn't matter, you want to see how the kid fares, because this is a steady dose of what you'd be getting in the regular season. And it's just going to get chippier and chippier. I think, you know, that line of Höglander and Connor Garland is probably the best situation for him based on, A, you'll see some offense. These are two guys that they're off-leash pit bulls, right?
Yes.
That's exactly what they are, which is exactly what you want. They're on the front foot, but you have to be responsible defensively when you're playing with them, because they are going to be so, you know, intense and be disruptors. Mm-hmm. And Aturatu, even though his game is not perfect yet and there's still a lot of learning to do for a 20-year-old kid. He's extremely mature, and his decision-making is quite good. So to sit back and be third man high, I don't think he has any issue with that whatsoever, and his reads are getting better and better the more games he's played. So in theory, you know, this is a good opportunity for him to see, all right, now I'm going to be playing more NHL-ready players, and does he still have that maturity in his game? Or is it more deer in headlights?
It's going to be interesting to see if he does get that spot or if they put Teddy Bluger there, right? Or because you would expect Teddy Bluger's been practicing, right? You'd expect him to get in a game before the regular season. And maybe they just say, you know what? Go center the fourth line, right? Play with Neil Zaman, play with Archie Baines. We know what you can do. So we just really want you to get those minutes out there. We don't need to put you with Garland and Hoglander. But I think it's a pretty big vote of confidence if Atu Ratu gets to skate with those guys again. Like, to me, that is a meaningful sign that he's still very much in consideration to make the team if he gets that spot. I mean, the other thing is, like, what's Pugh Suter's status going to be, right? This could be kind of a moot conversation if Pugh Suter isn't good to go by Wednesday. And then there's the whole LTI situation. Do they look to make a trade? So, again, as I said, it seems like so much of it is out of these guys' control. But still, you want to go have that strong final effort of the preseason.
Yeah, Suter is going to be key because the way that this team lines up, and listen, I think the best center group in the Western Conference and arguably the league is Vegas.
Yeah.
We can discuss their defensive group and their wingers all we want, but if you look down the middle of the ice at the forward position, they're stacked. Tomas Hertl, you know, even Chandler Stephenson not being a part of that equation, you still have William Karlsson, you still have Jack Eichel, you still have Waugh back there. That's a stacked center group. But with Vancouver, if everybody is healthy, you know, having Pugh Suter on your third line potentially as a guy that's going to give you 15 to 16 goals with skilled players, that's a pretty good situation to be. Teddy Bluger, if he's in the third line role, it's more of a shutdown line and can chip in with some offense. So you have options. I think the Atu Ratu situation is already a win for this team. This kid has shown something that I don't know if many people expected. I even asked JT Miller in the locker room the other day about, you know, what he sees and said, first thing, he hasn't been on the ice with him very much, but the speed. Everybody knows the speed. Even the players are just like, wow, this guy's got another gear this year. So if he doesn't play a regular season game to start the year, it's a win. If Pugh Suter is not ready for the season, you give this kid some experience and say, run with it. Let's see how you do. And if you have to send him down later on, he's going back to the AHL with confidence.
And he's going to play big minutes.
The mentality of, all right, I got my taste and I want to go back. I think Ratu also for a 21-year-old is very mature. He understands if this is not his time, he's going to be back and he wants to make it stick. So I'm curious to see how he does, but I think he's shown something this year that is a huge step for the organization and gives you an option down the middle.
Worst case scenario, and again, this is still a very good thing for the Canucks, is he has really given you another legitimate depth option, right? So especially at center, which was a question mark beyond, you know, Neil Zaman, who hasn't been great in the faceoff circle. Now you start to build out that center depth a little bit down the road in the season. All right, 650-650 is the Dunbar Lumber text line. I was asking earlier in the show for you to send in your submissions. What are you most confident about for the Canucks? What are you most concerned about with the regular season looming? And I wanted to read a couple more of those texts. You can keep sending them in too, 650-650. But a couple of similar ones here. This one from Sebastian in Burnaby who says, what I'm worried about is Big Z's physicality is gone, especially during the playoffs. Joe and Smithers texting in, we still aren't tough enough. And this is something I'm not totally surprised to see it come in. I've seen it come up in the text message inbox over the last month or so. I'm a little surprised because, look, I get it with Zadorov. It's not just the physicality. It's the swagger, right? It's the he's going to show up dressed
suit game.
He's going to show up dressed like a Bond villain. He is going to deliver a devastating hit to somebody in the game. He's going to skate past the other team's bench and chirp them. And then he's going to say something funny about it after the game to the media, right? Yeah. Like, it's the total package. So I understand. They don't have a player like that.
They're described a WWE superstar, by the way.
That's right. Oh,
that's
man.
That's what Nikita Zadorov
is. Can you imagine Zadorov in the Royal Rumble?
He'd be like, what, Diesel? Kevin Nash back in the day, powerbombing everybody? That's what he is, man.
Yeah, Zadorov would be incredible.
It would take like five different wrestlers to eliminate him.
They'd have to team up like they do for the Big Show. So I get it. He's a total package in that regard. They don't have a player like that. There's very few players like that in the league. But if you just look at actual physicality and the ability to have that physical, tough, hard-to-play-against identity, Like, let's not forget, yeah, they lost 6'7" Nikita Zadorov. The blue line's actually bigger, physically bigger than it was last year. Derek Forbort, the smallest guy on the bottom two pairings, is 6'4". He's enormous. Vincent Desharnais is enormous. Carson Soucy and Tyler Myers are enormous. I get that there's more to physicality and edge than just that size, but there's still a lot of really big, tough players on this team.
The biggest loss from not having Nikita Zadorov on this team is not toughness. It's the ability to move the puck from the back end and his ability to score.
Mm-hmm.
Right? He scored 16 goals in Calgary a couple of years ago. He's able to, as Rick Tocchet puts it, skate into pressure. That's going to be the biggest loss. It's not the physicality, because you're right. Forbort, Desharnais. Let's go into the forward group. Dakota Joshua is not playing right now.
So, at forward, I think it's a little more understandable, the concern. But, you know, a guy like Kiefer Sherwood.
I was going to say, he might be small, but he plays big, right? 8 hits a game, 9 hits a game, going back to the playoffs. This is a guy that will run through people. That's playing big. The rest of the lineup, yes, there are questions. JT Miller is going to be your F1 on that top line. Danton Heinen, as I believe Drance called him, an amphibian-like body, a swimmer's body, right? Like, it's a different type of physicality. He's got wingspan. He's got all of that. So there are other ways to play a physical game. But I think one thing we have to be very careful with is the roster that you have on opening night is not the one that matters in the playoffs. There will be moves made if the team is in a position to add. And that's where I think we have to be really careful of, yes, Sam Bennett was a difference maker in the playoffs. You don't hear from Sam Bennett in the regular season.
As much.
As much. So are there players that you can, A, develop into that role in your own roster, or B, can you pick them up as teams drop out of playoff races? And that's why I look at the physicality on the back end, not an issue. The forward group, yeah, I wouldn't mind seeing another forechecker in there.
Yeah, although I think a lot of that is taken care of to a certain degree by Dakota Joshua returning, right? Yep. And even then you look at, you know, Miller can play very physical. Like, you need a certain guys who are set the standard, like a Dakota Joshua, I think like a Kiefer Sherwood, who really are well above average, you know, at the top end of the league in terms of that energy. Once you have that, you know, a guy like Brock Besser, he's not going to set the standard like that, but he's not a soft player. He's a strong player, right? Like, he's a physical player. As you said, like a Danton Heinen, a Jake DeBrusque now you add to the mix. Even smaller players like Nils Höglander and Connor Garland, those guys get to the inside, right? They're not shy about going there. So to me, if we're talking about concerns about this team, I think once Dakota Joshua is healthy, I'm not concerned about that toughness, that size element. And even if we're looking at the deadline, based on how they're all healthy right now, like, I'm not sure who I'm bumping out of the lineup to bring in that toughness element. I think if you have Dakota Joshua, you say, all right, we're going to roll with that.
Yeah, the way the lineup looks right now, less than a week away from the season, if I was projecting to the trade deadline, which we often do, and I'm sure all our listeners are too.
It's just a scant 6 months away.
Why not, right? The back end is probably where you look to add first.
Yeah,
we discussed that before.
Absolutely.
But getting to the inside, that's the key here. Brock Besser is not going to be throwing open ice hits.
Yes.
But the playoffs last year showed that he can get inside.
Can you get into the inside? Can you win battles on the wall? That's absolutely the other part of it, right? Like, that's to me where it goes from just theoretical, I want to be a big, tough team, to how do you use that bigness and toughness, that size and toughness is what I'm trying to say. And one of the key things, as you said, getting to the inside, but also winning those battles on the boards. And so when you start to talk about team toughness, like a name that crops up to me, Daniel Sprong. Is he going to do enough to stick in the top six and play big minutes for Rick Tocchet?
And how does, once again, the name that we're going to bring up until he's healthy and he's ready to go and he's fine is Dakota Joshua, right? Because I hear a lot of conversation of Bluger, Garland, Joshua, third line that was best in the league. Maybe the ceiling for Dakota Joshua is higher. Maybe there's a greater impact he can make in the top six. And potentially, hey, Daniel Sprong plays well, and that's a line you keep together. That's great. It's good to have options, but whenever Dakota's good to play, I would not be surprised to see him in the top six at some point this season, because he is that type of unicorn player where you want an excellent forechecker in every single line. We know JT is that. We know Jake DeBrusque can play that role, but maybe if we wanted to like load up on a line, just imagine having a Dakota Joshua in that top six alongside one of those guys. That's another option you could potentially have. So physicality, I don't think that's an issue right now. You want physicality, but you also want skill, right? We talk about hard skill. Throwing a big guy in the bottom six, that's fine. Pat Maroon's made a career out of it. And credit to Pat Maroon, Stanley Cup champion. He's a guy that scored some big goals in his career too, but he's not the player he was 2 or 3 years ago. And we'll see what happens in his most recent team. But you know, if you just want a big player that can occupy 7 to 8 minutes, you still need that skill. You need somebody who can chip in and move up the lineup.
That point about Joshua moving up the lineup is an interesting one, right? Because it's not as if Danton Heinen is locked into that spot. I think there's going to be opportunities for a Joshua, maybe a DeBrusk if it doesn't work with Pettersson. Like, I've been really impressed with Nils Höglander. Is that even something that they give a look at some point? But Joshua is the interesting one. If they ever decide to break up the Joshua Garland pairing and you move him up, I think that gives a pretty interesting wrinkle to that top lineup. All of a sudden now, then you've got JT Miller and Dakota Joshua on a line together. That's a lot for opposing defenses to deal with.
And that helps JT a lot too, because this is a player that will never on his own rein it in. He plays a certain way. But a part of that is also, all right, do you have a player that can play the same F1 role effectively? And Dakota Joshua can, right? He's got the length. He's got the physicality where JT can maybe – he's got hard miles on him. This guy's been playing in the league for a long time. He doesn't play, you know, a role that's hanging back. He's in the middle of it. He plays a physical style. Do you preserve a little bit more of JT? And maybe he doesn't have to engage as many battles, and he's got some help physically. You know, with Danton Heinen, good player, solid player, can disrupt, but – we'll see how that works. It's nice to have some options.
This one comes in from Glenn in Victoria quickly before the end of the show here. Hello, Demko! Obviously the most concerning boys in all caps from Glenn in Victoria. I am a little surprised we didn't get more Demko responses in. I think for me, the reason is, one, in the interim, I'm very confident in Lankinen and Shelovs as a combination. I'm very confident in the defensive structure that they're going to be playing behind, right, and what Rick Tocchet has done for that for the team in that regard. And I guess it's just, obviously, it's a concern, but it's also so unknowable, right? Like, we have no idea what Thatcher Demko's status is going to be in February. And I'm so much more concerned about that. And to me, there's at least some reason to be cautiously optimistic about, okay, by the time February, March, April rolls around, he's going to be back on the ice. He'll have had time to adjust to this. And, you know, maybe he'll be in a pretty good spot, actually.
Yeah, the texter's right. But I to me, it was kind of like the obvious one, which is, I think isn't that the underlying concern that every Canucks analyst, radio show host, fan has, where it's like, oh, yeah, that's the given. That's why I didn't mention it, because the structure of the team is going to help him win a lot of games.
Look, if we get to March and we're having the same conversation and it's been a rocky road for Demko, then he's rocketing to the top of my list.
Totally.
Right?
But there is a difference between regular season and postseason, because you can, on a night-to-night basis, when you're going from Calgary to Edmonton to play in Winnipeg, teams reset. And it's kind of like you have a new opposition. In the playoffs, we know you're playing for keeps. And then teams also adjust you game to game. And if there's a flaw in a goaltender's game, as we saw to a certain extent with Shelovs last year, where you know, he's a 6'4 goalie, but at certain times he doesn't play that tall, narrow game, you're going to get exposed. Now, if we're talking about Thatcher Demko not being available for the playoffs, as you mentioned, March, April, May, all of that stuff, the elite goaltenders can sometimes win you series. And if you don't have one, and the other team does, you're at a disadvantage. So if we're having this conversation later on, I think it's very much a top concern, the top concern with a bullet. But we're also here at the beginning of October. You've got a 1A, 1B situation by the looks of it. Pretty strong one. We'll see how it goes. But that's why I didn't include in mine, because to your point, there's a lot we don't know.
Yeah. He is Randeep Janda, of course, color commentator for Canucks games on Sportsnet 650. He'll be on the call with Batch tomorrow for that final preseason game. And of course, you can also check out his podcast with Batch in the Booth, available wherever you get your podcast, right? Does it have its own feed?
We're on the Canucks Central feed.
Yeah. So piggybacking on the Canucks Central feed.
We're subletting that.
You're
space.
Boosting their numbers.
Exactly.
Look how many downloads we get. Wow. Anyways, go check out the In the Booth podcast. Back tomorrow for Friday edition of Canucks Talk here on Sportsnet 650.